name is Rich, and I'm an alcoholic.
Rich, and my name is Kyle. I'm an alcoholic.
And wow, I think this is like the biggest turnout we've had since we started this series. I believe now we're in our 10th, right, week, yeah. And we only have two more to go. And the only thing I have to say about that is, where were you guys when we started? Come on. It was a lot of fun. We've done a lot of things. We've covered a lot of material. In the last two sessions that we had, we talked a lot about we agnostics. And we put some interesting things on the table. As a qualifier, similar to the disclaimer on a package of cigarettes, I will continue to say that our opinions expressed here are solely that of myself and Kyle's. We do not represent the AA police. We are not here setting down the standard by which recovery is judged. We are merely sharing our experience, strength, and hope, in hope that maybe we can help start a conversation, maybe amongst yourselves or maybe with yourself, about just what this is all about to me. What does it mean to me? Because we're certainly going to talk about what it means to us. We read a few pages of We Agnostics, and we kind of came to the conclusion that this really this was about a desperate need for something. And the big book, although it seems very let's say esoteric to some, I think it's very straightforward. I don't think there's any real mystery about what the big book is trying to say. I think if you look at Bill's story, and if you look at Fred's story, and if you look at Jim's story, and even in There Is a Solution, the guy who flies to Europe, right, to meet with Carl Jung, and you look at all their stories, they all have one thing in common, right? That they all failed to enlarge or connect with a spiritual component of their life, and that resulted in their relapsing. So, once again, I mean, the big book seems to be spoon-feeding me this idea that this is going to be an essential component of my sobriety if I want to maintain anything like, you know, like permanent sobriety. I'm going to have some kind of connection with a power greater than themselves. We use the line, again and again here in this room, you know, at certain times, the alcoholic will not be able to pull into his memory with sufficient force the pain, misery, of suffering of even a week or a month ago. And that he will be without, or she will be without, mental defense against that first drink. And now, what did that mean? Well, we thought about that a lot, and we said, the statement itself says, at certain times, which means that sometimes I can. Sometimes I can remember the pain, misery, and suffering that my alcoholism has caused over the course of my addiction and life. And sometimes I can play back the tapes, and sometimes I can stay sober based on remembering some horrible experience. But then certain times will come when I will not be able to do that, right? Suddenly will happen. Suddenly happened to Jim. Suddenly happened to Fred. Suddenly kind of happens. And the big book again and again keeps explaining once suddenly happens, right, you have placed yourself probably beyond human aid, and that somehow that connection is going to have to be made. So that's the kind of approach that we walked into the We Agnostics. You know, we challenge the big book a lot. We challenge the big book because we feel that if, in order for this book to be relevant in our day and age, it has to withstand a modern read. You can't just say it was true back then. It has to be relevant right now. And so far, everything that we've read in the big book has been relevant and has had meaning, right? It has resonated with us about this. This story of the lack of the spiritual component is just kind of very obvious, right? It keeps being driven home day and again. Okay, so now we have this urgent need that is described all the way through to this notion of there is a solution. Which, by the way, you know, it's we talked about that, so I don't want to digress too much. But so we walk into We Agnostics, and the first part of We Agnostics is just talking about, hey, there is a desperate need for this. And then we read a little bit more, and they said, here's a few good reasons why. We talked about the electricity and the prosaic girder and the fact that evidence, the visual evidence was immaterial, and that really... we are going to be required at a certain point to take a leap of faith. And that's what I think this whole thing kind of brings us to the point of, are we ready to take that leap of faith? Now remember, in order to get to this part of the book, there had to be something called hopelessness in your position. You know, beaten into a state of reasonableness, I believe, is one of the quotes that has it. And once you're beaten into the state of reasonableness, and there's this very funny term in the book that says, you know, to live our life, on, to, you know, to go on to the bitter end, drowning out all the misery and suffering, or to live on a spiritual life are not always easy alternatives to face, which seems very weird because, I mean, come on. But now I'm desperate enough, I'm really in a position where it's going to be either take this solution or leave the store empty-handed. And we challenged the group a little bit. We challenged the group a little bit last week. We said, listen, you know, when I get through with a newcomer and doing this, it's just about willingness. It's not about some solid relationship that I have with this power greater than myself. Maybe it's just good orderly direction. Maybe it's even the group of drunks. It's something to make a beginning. You know, somehow I have to get over my intellectual pride that I know everything, and somehow I have to move to the next stage. And then we introduced a very controversial thought, and I hope some of you remembered it from last week, and that was the notion of what if there is no God? What if there is no God? Well, a lot of people are saying, well, that's great, that's my out then. No, we're not going to let you off the hook that easy, right? Because if you think about it, if you think about it even for just a minute, you'll think about, why do we do good things in life? Why do we struggle to become good people? I do not believe that people try to aspire to become better because they're seeking some type of eternal award or reward. I'm not looking to go to heaven. What I'm looking to do is prevent living in hell on earth. And if you are hopeless and you came into this room as an alcoholic, you know all about creating a living hell here on earth for yourself, because chances are that's why you came into the rooms. Nobody walked into Alcoholics Anonymous on the wings of victory and said, I just finished the best high I ever had and everything is great and I just decided to get sober. No. We decide to get sober because we are in a hopeless state of mind and body. And when we come in here, maybe we're ready to open the door to the possibility of change. And that's all we're talking about for newcomers, the possibility of change. But we also laid a challenge out to all the people who have been here for a while. We said, okay, here is the prayer and meditation. And everybody knows that, you know, even if you didn't believe in God, you have a small voice in the back of your head that you know what's right and you know what's wrong, right? You know it, but you don't always do it. We talked about Thomas Aquinas, who said, I know the right thing to do and I don't do it, and I know the wrong thing to do and I do that. So the challenge we put down to people who have been in the program for a long time is, what is the next thing God has put you in front of you to do? What's the next character defect? Do you know, I find that the bulletproofing of sobriety can happen if you're working on the next thing. If you stop at just the cessation of alcoholism and you don't work on anything else, well, guess what? To you, a relapse is drinking. If you stop drinking and decide, you know what, God also wants me to work on my anger issues. God wants me to work on my spending issues, my eating issues, whatever. And you pick one and decide, this month I'm going to work on that. Guess what? Relapse for you looks like too much spending on the credit card or too much at the ice cream counter. You know. So what we do is we try to separate ourselves from that one thing. Remember we said in the book, it said we thought that the cessation of alcoholism was in and of itself not enough. So we laid the challenge down to new people, not saying, hey, take it for where it's going, but what's God saying to you now? Because I know God's telling me all the time, put down the donut. And I'm like, no, I want this donut. This donut is good for me. So I'm always struggling like that. Now, one more thing about the notion of if there is no God, and then we'll start to read, is simple. It's simple. If there is no God, right, and you want to just kind of get with something good, just put an O in it and call it the power of good. You know, because we know, when we think about it, even for a minute, when we think about the ideal life, the person we want to become, who we aspire to be, it's never a mass murderer. It's never the serial killer, the child abuser. It's someone who's dedicated their life to helping other people. We admire people like that. And if we aspire to be this better person, right, then all of a sudden our life starts to change in more meaningful ways. Don't like praying in the morning? Don't think anyone's listening? How about just praying as an affirmation of the person you'd like to become? You know, help me to become a better father, a better husband, a better worker. Help me. Every day, remind yourself, today I'm working on doing this, whether you believe that someone's listening or not. And then meditate and ask yourself, what is that small inner voice telling me I have to do to reach that goal? What is that small voice saying? And the longer you've been in the program, you go from, you know, symphony orchestra, big band, rock and roll group, solo voice. And that voice is the voice of God. And it's talking to you every day. But we don't want to hear it because it's always telling me to do what I don't want to do. I know what the right thing to do is, and I don't do it. And I know what the wrong thing is to do, and I do that. So now there's a challenge. Newcomers, you're off the hook. All you have to do is become willing to believe. Old-timers, whoop, the flame just got turned up. You got to ask yourself, what's the next thing for me? What's the next thing? And believe me, I don't think that there's anyone in the room that has reached all of them. We used an analogy called gap legs, which I use a lot, which just means simply greed, anger, pride, lust, envy, gluttony, and sloth. If I look at any one of the defects of character I have, they all fall in one of those seven things. I've never found an eighth thing. So now we're going to continue on with our read, and I hope I've scared some of you enough. And you're going to say, oh God, what's the matter with that guy? And we're now I'm going to let Kyle, we'll start reading. And look, there's a but here.
We left off on page 52 at the first full paragraph. But in most fields, our generation has witnessed complete liberation of our thinking. Show any longshoreman a Sunday supplement describing a proposal to explore the moon by means of a rocket, and he will say, I bet they'd do it. Maybe not so long either. Is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for new, by the complete readiness with which we throw away the theory or gadget which does not work for something new which does? This is great. It comes up in every big book meeting I've ever been in that has read this paragraph. Oh, you know this was written before the moon landing, right? But if you think about it for a second, if I stop, you know, people are fond of quoting Elon Musk, right, saying, I want to die on Mars, just not on impact. If I ask you, you think we'll get a man to Mars? You'll be like, yeah, probably. I believe that. But the second I talk to you about God, you shut off. And Rich mentioned earlier in his intro, which was lovely and eloquent, and you did a fantastic job, this idea of being desperate. I thought you were at death's door because we spent, you know, we promised you we would try to take you through this like you were newcomers. And we spent 9 weeks trying to, we spent 8 weeks trying to get you to identify with the idea that you're powerless over alcohol. And for us, to be alcoholic means that to drink is to die. So why are you still so prideful? You believe readily that we'll get a man to Mars, but the second I mention God, you shut down. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. First of all, I don't think I've ever heard a better description in one paragraph of what active addiction was like. I could, you know, you go to speaker meetings sometimes and the guy gets up there and he's like, I'm not going to qualify, and then he qualifies for an hour, right? But it's real, real simple. We can get this done in one paragraph. Was not a basic solution. It's really not all that complicated. People like to complicate the hell out of this program. Again, speaking to you as if you were newcomers, are you willing? Do you truly believe that you're at death's door? And if that is the case, are you willing to make a change? Because otherwise, this is what you have to get out of life. This unfulfilling lifestyle is what you have to look forward to if you don't make that change. And I think you had something you wanted to say about
and
that.
And
as
what
well.
was one of the seven deadlies that we identified earlier on as the big blocking point of this was intellectual pride. I'm so smart, I know everything. And I recited a bunch of numbers, you know, about when the Big Bang happened and stuff like this. And I just want to, like, let everyone know, like, want to get back to this I don't believe thing. Think, well, you don't believe there's an all-knowing being that has a sense of what's going on with everyone and it interconnects the entire cosmos and we call it God. And you don't believe that, right? No, I don't. I don't believe that. But yet, you believe you know. You are all-knowing, right? You are all-knowing because you could tell me definitively that there is no God. How do you do that? By playing God. So in a way, we sit back and we make these judgments and we sit on our intellectual pride. We live about 80 years in a cosmos that's about 13.5 billion years old and we have the absolute intellectual arrogance to say, I know one way or another whether there is a God. Remember, this is not about adopting a belief. This is about become willing to accept the fact that I don't know everything. Once I get to the point where I can say I don't know everything, then I can learn something. But I can't learn anything if I come with the assumption that I already know. So once again, you know, the biggest roadblock I found for myself, and I won't speak for anyone else, just my own experience, is the absolute intellectual arrogance that I had in thinking that I knew. I get back to that story. Who are you to say there is no God? Who are you? And that's what I say most of the time about everything. Who the hell am I to say what you need to get sober in? Who am I to sit in judgment of you? And who am I to do these things? It's a little bit of arrogance, you know? Pride. It's all I'm about. Right? Now, how about this? The bedevilments. Everyone talks about, oh, the bedevilments. Anyone ever suffer from the bedevilments in sobriety?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Oh, what's up with that? You can feel those things sober. As a matter of fact, you can feel a lot of these things sober because once you get the alcohol goes away from you. Like, what do they say? When you take the alcohol away from the alcoholic, what do you have left? You have the ick. And those are the feelings, those icky feelings that we have that we're going to address in the steps that we don't seem to ever going to be able to get to in these last 2 weeks that we have here. But it's okay, right? We're going to come back in the summer. for our other 12 weeks, we're demanding. And now here's a good one. We saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance on the spirit of the universe. We had to stop doubting the power of God. And if you're still not on the fence about that, throw a little O in there and call it the power of good. Right? Our ideas did not work, but the good or God idea did work. Right? Now, where did we hear that before? I'm having like a deja vu. Then I turn back to page 25, and lo and behold, here I see, but we saw that it really worked in others, and we had to come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life that we had been living. So is this a cryptic text that requires detailed deciphering by intellectual giants? Or is it just the same thing being told again and again and again? Willpower doesn't work. Self-knowledge doesn't work. Playing the tape doesn't work. Fear doesn't work. Those things are all great. But without that connection, whether it's good, whether it's God, whatever you want to call it, it's going to be very hard at certain times to be able to call into memory with sufficient force the pain, misery, and suffering of even a week or a month ago. And you will be without a defense against that first drink. That's all it's saying. That is all it's saying. Now, we're going to go on. Can I read a little bit, Carl?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thanks, Carl. All right. The Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a machine which could fly was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Without that, nothing could have happened. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problem. You see, self-reliance. I'm doing this myself. That is my problem. My problem is I am lost. I am caught in self. I am trapped in self. I can't get out of myself. When others showed us that the God sufficiency worked for them, we began to feel like those who insisted the Wright brothers could never fly. Logic is great stuff. We liked it. We still like it. It is not by chance that we were given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses, and to draw conclusions. That is one of man's magnificent attributes. We agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with the proposal which does not lend itself to reasonable approach and interpretation. I'm going to stop right there and say that is the crux of the whole thing. I can't believe in God because you cannot give me a satisfactory answer as to satisfied with the proposal which does not lend itself to a reasonable approach or interpretation. You're asking me to take a leap of faith. You're asking me, you know, you've come so far on reason, right? We've come so far. We've understood through our intellectual minds all about our illness. We understand that there's a need for this spiritual component in our life. But we just can't get across that one last little leap because we feel that there's no logical evidence. That's why it's tying it to all the scientific approach to everything. Because that's the society we live in. Everything has to have an explanation. Are there things that do not have explanations in our life? This is a leap of faith, and I believe just like centuries ago, no one would have thought a cell phone could ever exist. But now cell phones exist. We cannot throw out the baby with the bathwater. You can't just turn to the modern lifestyle and say, you know what life is all about? Life is all about he who has the most toys at the end wins. That's all it's about. How much material possessions can you accumulate? How wealthy can you be? How famous can you become? Fame is great stuff, but you know what? Fame and fortune, that all is a passing thing. You know? So this spiritual connection that our modern society seems to give up so easily and replace with like the external, exterior things really deserves a second look. Really deserves like a leap, you know, are we going to take that leap of faith? And once again, I call us back to the hopelessness of our condition. If you're working with a newcomer, right, they're pretty like at death's door. This seems like not such a big compromise to make. Hence, we are at pains to tell why we think our present faith is reasonable. In other words, here we go, having to explain to all these newcomers why this is a reasonable approach, and I'm like, here you are. You just came out of living in a parked car. You're about two steps away from a lunatic asylum. You're going to court tomorrow, and you're going to sit there and have me explain to you why God is a necessary component in your life. It's like the height of intellectual arrogance. Right? So we're at pains to tell why we think faith is reasonable and why we think it is more sane and logical to believe than not to believe. Why we say our former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said, hey, we don't know. We don't know. I'm not here. We're not here to tell you that God exists or does not exist. We're trying to here to tell you, stop thinking that you're so smart that you know one way or another. And maybe just open yourself up to be willing. Be an observer. Look around. Do the practice. Pray. Meditate. Don't believe in God? Make an affirmation of who you want to become. Don't believe in God? Wait a little while. Listen. See what the inner voice says to you. We're willing to bet dollars to donuts. After 6 months of this practice, you will have a connection to something that we don't understand, because I don't know what your God is. I'm not here to tell you what God is. I'm here to tell you that if you want a relationship, you got to go out of your way to get the relationship. There was a guy here, Mike, that was coming a while. I wish he was here. He'd tell the story. He talks about this great story about relationships. He said, listen, you talk about a relationship with God, right? He says, I have a relationship I want with my son. He says, but my son's too busy. He's at work some days, and then some days he's with his kid and his wife, and every time I call him, he keeps saying, I can't make it, Dad, I love you, I just can't make it. And he goes, so what I did was I told him, okay, you're driving home from work at 5 o'clock, you're home at 6. I'll be at your house at 6 o'clock, I'll sit down with you for a half an hour, 45 minutes, we'll have some dinner, I'll go. Son says, okay, that's working my schedule. He worked himself around his son's schedule because the relationship was important to him. When the relationship building becomes important to you, you will work yourself around that schedule. You will find that 5 or 10 minutes to meditate in the morning. You will find that 5 minutes of prayer because you're saying to yourself, this relationship is important to me. Don't believe in God? It's okay. Go through the motions. Affirm the person you want to be. Listen to the voice in your head. We're telling you. We are telling you. I'm not just saying this because, they're talking. I'm saying this because this is something I've experienced. And we want to hope that you have that same experience. And once again, it's you want to read some, or do you want to say something, Tara?
I would, actually.
I'm sorry.
I know.
I've been very...
That's all right.
What have I been tonight? I've been... bloviating a lot tonight.
You wanted a half hour for discussion. I don't think that's going to happen. And I do apologize, but I'm going to take it back just a wee bit. On 52, when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. When we saw others, I was at my home group this past Tuesday, and the subject of being judgmental came up. And people were really touting this idea of taking other people's inventory. And again, so not up here to tell you what your program should look like. I'm up here, I am privileged to be up here to let you know what my program looks like. And I don't have to take your inventory. I really don't. Because this solution makes you glow. There is a stillness to you. And you can't fake it, you can't sell it, and I don't got to go digging through your motivations to find it. You know? So ultimately, I could not do this on my own without this. And I look around and I see you wonderful people. What is it? What's different about what you do? And come to find out, it is a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe. Do you ever handle calamity great and then the little shit trips you up? All the, you know, I can handle crisis just fine because I trust and I believe. But then I spill scalding milk on myself at work and it's, oh my God, how could this be part of the plan? It's part of the plan. You know, it's... So I wanted to talk about that real quick. This idea on 53, a reasonable approach, more sane and logical to believe than not to believe. I'll tell you why it's more sane and logical. I've said it a couple of times on this workshop that we're doing, but I didn't get with this whole program of recovery, our design of living until 6-7 months clean. And that was no way to live. This lifestyle I have now is way saner than the literal insanity I had before I came to this. On this subject of we don't know, because ultimately that's what being agnostic means. It means without knowledge. Far be it for some asshole like me to rewrite the big book, but I'm not up here to tell you that I know God exists, because I don't. I'm up here to tell you that I don't know it the way I know 2 + 2 = 4. I am privileged to let you know that I believe it the same way I believe the sun will rise tomorrow. And so I don't know. And I can't make you know. I was so obsessed with the idea of knowing concretely. And come to find out, I will never be that fortunate. You know, I've made this joke a couple of times now, but if I hear a voice, I'm talking to my doctor, period. You know, I will never be fortunate enough to know concretely, but I don't need that because I believe, and nothing can take that away from me. And I would really like to do the next paragraph, if you'll let me. Thank you, Isle. When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Now, we promised you we would take you through this as if you were newcomers. This is not a proposition I expect somebody who's 3 days clean and completely self-obsessed to get with. This is not something I could get with for a very long time, right? But to the recovered alcoholics in the room, to the people who've been through the work, to the people with time, we've spoken a couple of times. Rich has this awesome saying of fire your old God and get a bigger God. When I spill steaming milk on myself, is my God big enough then? You know, I have an obligation to be at Thanksgiving this year, you know. I'm going to try to stop by the Alcathon because it's not too far from my job. But, you know, when my dad's a train wreck, is my God going to be big enough then? Is your God big enough when you don't win the scratch-off? Is your God big enough when the dog shits on the carpet? It's the more time I get clean, the more I realize that little fourth step promise of just to the extent that we trust and rely on God, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity, remains very, very true. But it is so often the petty shit that trips my ass up, you know? In that moment, am I really trusting in the process? Do I really have that bulletproof faith in that moment when I stumble? So this idea of God is everything or else he is nothing is something I have to revisit quite often moving forward. Again, this is not something... my sponsor loves to tell the story about how much he struggled with me on We Agnostics, you know. Listen to him laugh, God. I love it. This is not something I could get with. So when I take someone through the work, I do not expect them to sign up for the God is everything train because I was incapable of it. Why should I demand of you what I was unwilling to do? That is not my job. It's my job to teach. It's my job to let you know that this whole thing early on is about destroying your intellectual pride. It's about willingness. And it's something, it's my job to let you know that this is something I need to revisit all the time. Because I want so badly to let you know that I'm perfect, and I'm not, man. You know, I'm not. I wish I could tell you my faith is flawless, it's bulletproof 100% of the time. And it's not. Which is why I have to revisit this. In that moment when I stumble, I need to take a look at things and say, I need a bigger God, because there is a rhyme and a reason to this. There is a rhythm to the way this is unfolding. And ultimately, it's a rather comforting thought to think that for all my scars, it has led me to this moment. And this is not a bad moment to be in. I'm sorry, I love that paragraph. You can talk.
It's okay,
now.
It's okay. That's
thank you.
Well put, Colin. I would just say that to talk to the same thing, you know, here we are, we're in this position, we're in a hopeless state of mind and body, and we said, when we became alcoholics, we were crushed by a self-imposed crisis, right? That's the first inkling that the book is giving me that this is all of my own making. Do you remember when I said about how we can create a heaven and hell on earth for ourselves right here and right now? The crisis, the things that bother me the most, the things that absolutely drive me to drink are all due to my own creation. I am creating hell on earth because I don't have this connection. I don't have the power of God. I don't have the power of good. I just have the power of self. My ego. I know everything. You guys don't know anything. I'm coming in here. I'm going to tell you guys how to get sober. I no wonder why the old timers used to tell the new people, just sit down and shut up. Because it's just agonizing to get into the debate society, you know, about what God is, what is. You know, we have intellectual giants in AA who just can't seem to take things at their face value. Look, you are screwed. This is it. Take it or leave it and go back out there and do it again. Because with the power of self, the only thing I can accomplish is steering the boat into the rocks. That's all I do. You know, there's a joke. I like jokes. Where this guy is rowing a boat, and God is steering the boat. And the guy's rowing, and his arms get tired, and he yells out to God, God, man, I can't row anymore. Can I steer for a while? And God says, yes, my son, you may steer, but I don't row. Meaning that I won't do the work that you won't do. I won't do it for you. I will give you the direction, but you have to do the practice. I get back to the same thing. No out. If your intellectual pride is so high that you still can't accept God at this point, there's no out. I still want you to pray in the morning about the person you want to become. I still want you to reflect every day for at least 5 minutes, maybe 10, on how that's going to be accomplished. And I still defy anyone to do that for 6 months in a row and come back to me and say, I feel no connection whatsoever to anything, and I still don't believe in God. This is about building relationships. This is about understanding that as I do it by myself right now, I am doing it wrong. And I have not had any success with managing my alcoholism or addiction, and that if I continue on in this way, I'm going to succumb to the one of the four outcomes, right? Which is what? Death, institutions, jail, or recovery. That is the path that I have chosen. And if I want, you know, what is that they said? To be faced with an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis is difficult to find. Why is that? Because alcoholics are the only people in the world who could be snatched from the jaws of death and live to complain about it. You know, that's all we do. We fall in the rut and we start carpeting. You know, that's how we roll. We're trying to tell you in the nicest way possible that without some kind of connection, whatever you want to call it, the shit is going to hit the fan. And it's not going to be something that you're going to be able to think about with willpower. And it's not, and all your self-knowledge about your mental obsession and your physical allergy is going to mean nothing. So here you are. You're kind of at the jumping off place, aren't you? And now we're asking you to take this leap of faith. Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason. That's the arguments that they're making before about the electric and the girder and all this stuff, right? They're trying to paint a rational, reasonable argument to you because you're that person who is agnostically inclined, who's not happy unless there's some reasonable proposition put in front of you. So we've done that. Some of us have already walked far over the bridge of reason toward the desired sure faith. The outlines and promise of the new land had brought luster to tired eyes. Everyone's like, wow, I can do this. The fresh courage and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out to welcome. We were gratified that reason had brought you so far, but somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavy on reason, intellectual pride, that last mile that we did not like to lose our support. Nobody likes to let go. But there's an expression in our program that says, let go or be dragged. Let go or be dragged. And that's the way we roll. We don't want to let go. So we get dragged. And some of us get awfully bloody through that process. So I just say, let go. Let God. Let go and let God. And you will be surprised. you'll be surprised that that meaningless bit of prayer or meditation that you did every morning for 6 months, right, which seemed at first a flimsy reed, will turn out to be the loving hand of God. What seemed at first a flimsy reed turns out to be the loving hand of God. But it's not going to happen if you don't put any work into it. This is not about, hey man, just don't drink and go to meetings. This is about being aggressive about your sobriety. You want to get happy, you want to get high when you were drinking. How about chasing after your sobriety with the same vigor that you chased after alcohol and drugs? And guess what? You're going to hear some stuff you don't want to hear. You're going to hear some, oh my God, I don't want to do that. Oh no, I just want to stop drinking. I don't want to stop yelling at my wife. I don't want to stop beating my kids. I don't want to stop over. I don't want to stop anything. I just came here to stop drinking. Guess what? Stay with this program and more will be revealed. But newcomers, you're off the hook. You don't have to do any of this. All you have to be is willing to believe. Those who have been in the program for a while, hey, we're just kind of throwing it out here as for your consideration. We lay the tool at your foot. We say, here, look, take a look and see what you see. Are you the intelligent spearhead of God's ever-advancing creation? That was a powerful statement we read. To be an intelligent spearhead of the creation of God is what does that look like? That was natural. But let us think a little more closely. Without knowing it, have we all been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? You want to read some more, Kyle? Did you want to say something?
Sure, I'll read. For did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? What was that but a sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful, abjectly faithful to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. We found, too, that we had been worshippers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? And then, with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? I'm going to stop there real quick. This idea of having faith in other aspects of our life. Faith in money is a great one. Who in here had faith in drugs and alcohol? I believe.
Everyone else who didn't raise their hand, you're a bunch of liars.
Raise your hand. Raise your hand. I believed and I trusted that it would accomplish what I needed it to. And damn the consequences. I believed that concretely. Faith was a big part of my life. As much as I would tell you it wasn't, I believed in everything except for God. And then with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? We talk about this idea of tuning into the frequency of God, right? And despite my best efforts, there were times out there in addiction where you hear a new song. You know, it's so fun. I did yoga for a really long time, and I didn't really understand it until I got clean. But I've been doing yoga for a very long time, and you're in relaxation pose, and there is a moment, and you feel it. You don't know what the feeling is, but you feel it. I used to go hiking a lot, and you see a tree, or the stillness of the forest. And there is a moment where you feel in touch with something, but you don't have the words, you can't describe it. And whatever your intentions are, there's no way I would have admitted to you that it was the presence of God. But have you ever had a moment like that? For all that you think you know, right? For all that I thought I knew. God has been there the entire time. And I've been randomly and infrequently tuning into that frequency before I got here. That's all that the prayer and meditation is about trying to increase my ability to tune in. Because God's always there. It's, am I listening? And then, unfortunately, once I hear it, am I going to act on it? Because that's a whole other kit and caboodle, right? Because sometimes, I ain't perfect, man. I'm lazy sometimes, and that's very, very dangerous. But I'm not perfect. But worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower. Who of us had not loved something or somebody? God, it would not surprise me to discover that I'm on the spectrum because I'm such an introvert, and I see God in my dog all the time. I love it. I really do. You know, they're the most empathetic, wonderful creatures. How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing, we saw it last. God, the first time, it's always tied back to music for me. The first time I heard Goodbye Pork Pie Hat, and you feel it. You feel it. The first time you heard Goodbye by Adderley and Bill Evans, and you think, oh my God. And you're changed. What does reason have to do with that? Nothing. Were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. I have this awful habit of quoting really, really clever people and pretending that it's mine. But there's an author named William Peter Blatty, and he wrote a book called The Exorcist, which is not a complicated read. It's not like a monumental piece of literature. It's not an eminent text like Rich is constantly talking about. But it has the best description of faith I've ever read in my entire life. And it said that ultimately, you know, the priest is battling this demon, and he understands in a moment. He has a moment of clarity, which I think we as alcoholics might be able to identify with. He understands suddenly that faith is a matter of love. It's about being willing to love. It's about being loved. It's about being willing to grow and change. And that love, this love, is what gives our life meaning. I'm broke. I don't have toys. I don't have a lot of nice things. This music, this art, poetry, these things that I had faith in before I found my faith in God, this is what defined my existence. These little moments where I was in touch with that frequency. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. Do not drive a nice car and tell me you have no faith in anything. Please spare me. It's about applying that in a new direction. And here I thought you were willing to do anything. Rich, I'm sure you had something you wanted to say about that.
I think you locked that up pretty good. And I would. I want to continue on. I want to read.
Sure.
Imagine life without faith. We talked about this. We were talking about this before the meeting last week. We talked about the death of Ivan Ilyich, right? The Tolstoy short story, where he talks about how, you know, the material world is all great and all good, but you know, when we're confronted with our own mortality, as Ivan was in his death, and it was a premature death of a young man. It forced him to face and look at all the things that he had thought was valuable during his life. You know, he thought that the having the McMansion was important. He thought having the good job was important. But even after a while, he had to kind of think that he couldn't find meaning in his life. You know, it's not about who's got the most toys. It's just not about that. We surrender it because we're walking around. I walk around the city all the time and I see posters of beautiful, attractive women, and they're advertising to women, if only you wore your hair like this, people would love you. If only you drove this car. If only you ate this food. And somehow I connect everything about my life with all these things I'm seeing outside saying, if I only had that, what if I had a better relationship, although I couldn't have a better relationship than I have now? Now, my wife is here, that's true. What if I had more money, more this, more that? You know, would that make a difference? A new car is a wonderful analogy, because you get a new car and it's great for about a month, and then it's the old car. You know? It's like some of that thing. So imagine that if all your life, the only thing you lived for was material pleasure, of just pleasing yourself. Would that be a really rewarding and fulfilling life? were nothing left but pure reason, it wouldn't be life. But we believed in life. Of course we did. We could not prove life in the sense that you can prove a straight line is the shortest distance between points. Yet, there it was. Could we still say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling into a destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seemed to be more intelligent than that, at least so the chemist said. You know, we did talk a lot about, look, sometimes when I have that moment, when I'm watching the sunset, and I see something magnificently beautiful, maybe it's in my child's eyes, whatever, it's a moment. I get a glimpse into what that might be, that to be connected to everything in a fundamental way that doesn't involve myself. But the problem is extending that moment to another moment, and then another. And keep trying to push that moment out again and again and again, and you'll find it's almost impossible. You know, when I have a toothache, I have pain, and I always say to myself, oh my God, if only this toothache went away, I'd feel great. And then I get some Ambisol, or I go to the doctor, the dentist, and he takes a toothpick away, and I feel fantastic. I'm like, whoa, this is great, I don't have a toothache. But I don't walk around all day saying, you know what, I don't have any pain. I am so appreciative of life that I have the absence of pain, that I don't have to suffer. You know, I am so fortunate. I heard a speaker the other day say, you know, do you want to be in the top 1% of earners in this world? Many people think, oh yeah, I'd like to make more money and that'll help me. The top 1% of earners earns $23,000 a year. You think it's a million? It's not. $23,000 a year, and you're in the top 1% of world global income. But I never think, I have more than enough. I have all I need. I never want for food. I don't want for shelter. I don't want for clothing. I don't want for anything. I'm always thinking, I could use something else. I could make this better. You know what would make this better? Something new. Something improved. And I'm never appreciative of what I have. You see, that connection that we're trying to establish in everybody or thinking about with the meditation and the prayer is an attitude of gratitude. In the 19 years that I have been sober, I have never seen anybody drink who turned around and woke up every morning and said, thank you, God. Thank you, whatever. Thank you, good, for all the blessings in my life. Alcoholics are the people, they could look at a half a glass of water and they could say, that glass is half empty. They could look at all the things they don't have. When you get recovery, you start thinking, oh my God, that glass is half full. Look at all the things I have. Look at how grateful I should be. But you're still an alcoholic. You know why? Because you can't see that that glass is actually overflowing. But you can't see it. Because you're so caught up. Or I should say, not you, me. I can't see it. Because I'm so caught up. Because I'm an alcoholic. So yes, we're asking people to take a leap of faith. Yes. We're saying, hey, resign from the debating society. Quit playing God. Be a witness. Look around you. See if you could see that flimsy reed. See if you could see the presence of the loving hand of some something that you just don't understand. I don't understand how I could be in the program for 19 years and see people get their lives totally restored who I thought were totally done. But I've seen this. This is not a proposition that I'm reading from a book. I've seen this. And I'm telling you, if you could see it too. But you can't see it unless you're going to do any kind of work. Right? We have to do something. Nothing comes from nothing, right? Everything requires energy. Everybody knows if you go to school and you want to get an A at school, you study. You read the book. You do the homework. How many people walk into Alcoholics Anonymous and they say flat out, cure me. I'm here. Just cure me, will you? I heard that all I have to do is just don't drink and go to meetings. I'll be done, right? It's all good. Well, good news and bad news there. So maybe in the interest of time, we have to get to the guy falling out of bed. I don't care what happens.
Okay.
All right. So you want to let's go. Can we say actually we're fooling ourselves? For deep down, every man and woman is the fundamental idea of God. Remember the doggerel. Talk about the doggerel. The doggerel was Bill's little glimpse, right? How many of us have had little glimpses into the infinite? How many of us have had those? But how soon? Worldly clamors pulls me right out of that. Oh, that's beautiful sunset. I got to get to work. That's a beautiful, beautiful puppy dog you have there. Oh, Jesus. Did I leave the stove on? Put the teapot? I'm so willing to pull myself out of myself. But we all have that fundamental sense in our heart. You know, if you think even for a minute about it, that deep down inside, you know, there's a connection that you can make. We just don't want to make it because it asks us to do things we really don't want to do.
On the subject of this deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. I used to be of the opinion that I did not have that and that this was something I had to create. I have since realized that it's something I needed to be very, very willing and I needed to try very hard to find within me. I am of the opinion that it was always there. But it didn't just, you know, I didn't pray every night for a week and then, hey, it happened! How cool was that? I had to work for this. So please, again, room full of newcomers, do not pray for a month and tell me that there is no God within you.
Come, why don't you read this last paragraph, comment on it, and then we'll move on, because I think that sums it up pretty good, right?
We can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, that intellectual pride we keep talking about, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. We're very low on time. I think that kind of speaks for itself.
But it doesn't say it's there yet. It says it will come to you. Remember, we're new. And you're just starting this out, and we told you willingness. It doesn't say it's there yet. It says it will come to you. Why will it come to you? Because I practiced. So why don't you give me the one night?
Cool.
How about that? Let's start from our friend as a minister and get down to that squiggly line which you
absolutely
love to steal from
I
me.
I do. Our friend was a minister's son. He attended church school, where he became rebellious at what he thought was an overdose of religious education. For years thereafter, he was dogged by trouble and frustration, business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide. These calamities in his immediate family embittered and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism, impending mental and physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction. One night, when confined in a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, "If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question: "Is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong?" While pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came. It crowded out all else. "Who are you to say that there is no God?" Who are you? Who the hell do you think you are to have stumbled upon the meaning of existence and tell me there is no God? Please. Sorry. I know you want to talk.
Especially if you're an alcoholic who's crawling up from the gutter trying to get sober. It's like, "Here you are. I just got out of rehab. I'm going to tell you about God." Please. But think about this. And this is what I like to use. I like to use this as an overlay. Just about everything, right? Who am I to tell my poor friend Carol how to live her life? Who am I? Right? Who am I to tell people how to get sober? I'm not here. We are not here to tell you guys how to get sober. we understand in a fundamental way that there is the truth is one, but the paths are many. And if some guy raises up his hands and he says, just don't drink and go to meetings, and that's working for him, who am I? One time I thought, I was so arrogant, I was going to say, I was the big book thumper stumper in the Atlantic Group, which is a big book meeting, and I was going to say, where does it say, just put the plug in the jug in the big book as this question for the crowd of over 200 people who attend every Tuesday night? And a woman said, don't do that. And I said, why not? She said, because you never know what it takes somebody to put one more day together. You don't know. Maybe somebody needed to hear that. And they're going to come tomorrow. And then they're going to get the message that you think. You know, don't go to a meeting and judge the quality of the sobriety. You know, I'm here and I'm going to tell you how to get sober because I've done this. I used to walk around with this book and I used to just pontificate and bloviate, not like I'm doing tonight, by the way, about the nature of this book. But I don't do that anymore. Or at least I don't think I do. But what I'm trying to say is that we quit playing God. We resigned from the debating society. I'm not going to debate with one person in this room whether this approach is right or that approach is right, because you know what? Who the hell am I to say that I have the definitive approach to sobriety? We are all on our own spiritual journeys, and we are all going to go through changes, and we're all going to experience things. The best thing that we could do is recognize that in reality, we are all just walking each other home. That's all we're doing.
We cannot end without reading the last two sentences of this chapter. Okay. And it bothers me deeply that we had to skip around a bit here at the end, but I think we did it justice nonetheless. On page 57, the very last two sentences of We Agnostics: but he has come to all who have honestly sought him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. Honestly sought him. You cannot fake this. My room full of newcomers. You can't. You can't. Hey, come on. You can't. Honestly sought him. And I can't make you be honest about this. It took me a lot of pride leveling before I was capable of honestly searching for God. Here's the secret. God is within all of us. God is found through service. God is love. It's not complicated, but honestly sought him. And I hope that if you are new, that you try. Because it worked for me. In my own weird way, in my own stupid way. I could have gotten this so much easier, maybe, who knows. But if you are here and you are tired of the way life used to be, then you have a chance, and that's really, really cool. And I hope you'll give it a chance. And we are so out of time, but
we thought we were going to have a half an hour for
Q&A. Thank you very much for being here tonight.